This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us on the first day of 2025. I'm Mokbil Yabaro, and here's what's coming up.
When you win, you have a responsibility to unite a country. And so hopefully he's able to do that. We don't need another African country going down in flames.
That was Kwaku Nuwama, an analyst at American University, expressing hope that Mozambique's ruling party, Frelimo Party's Daniel Chapo, can extend an olive branch to the opposition to avoid a prolonged conflict there. Also, Americans are sharing reflections on former President Jimmy Carter following his death at the age of 100. And the U.S. military says its withdrawal from bases in Niger has had a major impact on efforts to fight terrorism in the region. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Americans are sharing reflections on the country's 39th president, Jimmy Carter, following his death Sunday at the age of 100. VOA's Scott Stearns has some of their remembrances.
Outside the White House, where flags are flying at half-staff, Californian Cheryl Jones says Jimmy Carter was her favorite president.
He was just a good man, a decent man, an honest man, something we don't see very much in Bolivia.
Kit Burns, a resident of the Washington State city of Tacoma, best remembers Carter for his work building homes for people in need.
There's a number of Habitat for Humanity housing near where I live. And his dedication to helping other people, I think that's the primary purpose for all of us in our lives. And it's terrible. The state of the world is where we're not helping people. And he set such an example for so many years.
Carter showed the importance of caring about people, says Virginia Natosha Walker.
You're a public service. You're here to serve people. So that's the most important quality. And leading by example, you know, he had Bible study. He did Habitat for Humanity. Those are all good examples of how we should lead and how we should interact with our fellow Americans.
The New York Stock Exchange held a moment of silence for the former president before its opening bell Monday. New Jersey resident Dolores Spivak remembers Carter's work with Israelis and Palestinians.
I am so in awe of him. I'm in awe of his presidency because he was the one who fought for the environment, civil rights. But afterwards, his books that he wrote, especially on the Mideast, were tremendous. I get chills when I think about the Camp David Agreement.
Carter's death is an opportunity to learn more about his life and presidency, says Connecticut resident Kim Potvin.
I think a lot of the policy that he was involved with that I wasn't aware of, and also just kind of the economics and history of that time. So I always think that we learn a lot from history because it translates a lot to present day.
In Carter's hometown of Plains, Georgia, Sandra Walters remembers a friend who grew up across the street.
Thank you, Lord, for letting him live 100 years and do all the things that he wanted to do. And I think he accomplished so much that who could be sad over anybody who had done what that man had done from a little town in Plains, Georgia, raised on a peanut farm and became the president of the United States.
Carter will be buried in Plains after a state funeral in Washington on January 9th. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Voters were busy across the globe in 2024, and more than a dozen countries in Africa were among those staging presidential, parliamentary, or local elections. While some longtime dominant ruling parties retained power in parts of Africa, incumbents suffered crushing defeats in others. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo, who covered a number of elections, looked at how they fared.
Were expected and other accomplishments as opposition leader Basiru Jamai Faye was elected, and at 44 years old, he became Africa's youngest president. His election victory came after a failed attempt by outgoing President Macky Sall to postpone the election process, creating a brief political crisis in the country. Analyst Teddy Kabiruka says lessons can be learned in the Senegal case.
It's really interesting, a very educative scenario for people who are learning democracy.
In Ghana, after serving only one term about a decade ago, John Mahama made a stunning comeback in 2024 and beat the country's vice president and ruling party candidate, Mahamudu Bawumia.
This mandate represents many things.
Analysts, including Kwame Asa Asante, told VOA that many voters in Ghana were thinking about the economy and their families' financial situations when they cast their ballots.
Because it's a bread and butter issue. Anytime, we've seen time and again that anytime you have what, a very difficult economy, campaigns become difficult for the government of the day.
Mahama vows to improve an economy which is slowly recovering from a $30 billion external debt default in 2022.
I, Juma Gideon Boko, do swear.
Botswana ushered in a new era by electing a leader from the opposition for the first time in nearly 60 years, following decades of rule by one party. Unlike Botswana, Mozambique's Frelimo party won again after nearly 50 years in power. Results were immediately rejected by opposition leader Venancio Mondlane, who came in second place, triggering violent protests in the southern African country. American University's Kweku Nwama hopes Frelimo's Daniel Chapo can extend an olive branch to the opposition to avoid a prolonged conflict in Mozambique.
When you win, you have a responsibility to unite a country. And so hopefully he's able to do that. We don't need another African country going down in flames.
Similarly, Namibia's ruling party SWAPO retained power after many decades of governance, but made history by electing its first female president, Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa. Her main challenger, however, called the elections deeply flawed after multiple examples of election day technical difficulties and ballot paper shortages were documented. In Rwanda, longtime leader Paul Kagame won almost 100% of the vote, a suspicious landslide victory, according to some analysts. A suspicious landslide victory, according to Strathmore University's professor Edgar Githua.
If you have a vote where 98% of the population vote for one candidate, that is a red flag.
While Kagame's critics say he has overstayed his place in power, others say he's done a lot for the country. Others say he's done a lot for the country, including Kaberuka.
The achievement is tangible. You can see it.
In South Africa, the African National Congress in power for 30 years failed to win the election with an outright majority, forcing it for the first time to form a coalition government. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
In 2024, protests by young Kenyans sent shockwaves through the country's political scene, forcing the government to drop proposed taxes and fire several ministers. The youth movement highlighted the challenges Kenya faced as the government tries to increase revenue from citizens who are grappling with the high cost of living and are angry about corruption and what they see as attempts to stifle dissent. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
As the year comes to an end, President William Ruto's government and a large section of Kenyan youth are still at odds over the direction the country is taking. The discontent erupted in June as Parliament considered a bill that would increase taxes on certain food items and other sectors in the economy to help repay foreign loans and fund development programs. Lawmakers passed the bill, leading protesters storming the Parliament buildings and burning a section of it. Ruto, seeing the public anger, declined to sign the bill into law. Nairobi has also witnessed protests against alleged police brutality. Rights groups say Kenyan security forces killed at least 65 people during protests or while in detention during 2024. On Monday, hundreds of protesters took to the streets of Nairobi to demand the release of Kenyans allegedly abducted from their homes and other places. According to human rights groups, at least 10 young critics of the government were kidnapped by unknown men in the last few weeks. The police have denied their officers were behind the abductions. Speaking in Homa Bay County on Friday, President Ruto said his government will end the mistreatment of youth. He called on parents to discipline their children.
Hawa watoto ni baraka kwetu tumepatiwa na Mwenyezi Mungu.
These children are blessings that are given to us. Every parent should take care of their children. Let's work for our children. We, the government, will do our part, and we will end the abductions so that the Kenyan youth can live in peace, Ruto said. Boniface Mwangi is a Kenyan activist. He says Kenyan youths are united against the political elite who have made life difficult for them.
The Gen Z movement, actually, they came together, they were united, and they had one goal to reject the finance bill, which they succeeded. And then they went a step further to demand for political reforms and change of the cabinet. And somewhat it happened, and that forced the political elite to come together. So for the first time, you have Uhuru Kenyatta, Raila Odinga and Ruto in the same camp.
Since the protest, President Ruto has formed what he called a broad-based government. He appointed some politicians allied with former President Uhuru Kenyatta and his 2022 election main challenger, Raila Odinga, to the office.
Tulianza tukiwa pande tofauti tofauti. Saa hizi tunafunga mwaka.
We started as divided people and are closing the year with a broad-based government. We have brought many Kenyans together, Ruto says. Political observers say this move is designed to better manage the opposition to his administration. Martin Andati, a political analyst, says such political maneuvers will do little to ease the public's anger toward the Ruto administration.
The guys in power are behaving like nothing happened. But the truth is the dynamics completely shifted. But you know, the old class, political class, inclusive of President William Ruto, Raila Odinga, the likes of Kalonzo, they are still stuck in a time warp. They are still thinking along tribal chieftains and political kingpins. Then they are going back to 2007, when these youth are in 2027 already.
Political observers predict a tough political fight ahead, as the Kenyan government and political parties have to constitute a new electoral commission. The current one technically exists, but all the commissioners' terms have expired. Some are concerned that youthful activists will start petitions to recall members of parliament, a move that, if successful, may lead to the fall of the government and an early election before 2027. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara said in an end-of-year speech that French forces will withdraw from the West African nation in January. The move makes it the latest country to weaken military ties with the former colonial power. The French news agency AFP reports Ouattara said late Tuesday that Ivory Coast could be proud of its army, whose modernization is now effective. Ouattara, who has not yet said whether he will seek a fourth term in elections slated for October, said the 43rd BIMA Marine Infantry Battalion at Port Bouet in Abidjan, where French troops are currently stationed, will be handed over to Ivory Coast Armed Forces. About 1,000 French soldiers were deployed to the 43rd BIMA to assist, in particular with the fight against Islamic fighters in the Sahel region, as well as the north of some countries along the Gulf of Guinea. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Mukbil Yabaro in Washington, and we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news in our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. In September, the U.S. military completed its withdrawal from Niger, where it had two bases that helped partners in the Sahel counterterrorism. The pullout came after members of Niger's military staged a coup in 2023. The U.S. military says the withdrawal has had a major impact on efforts to fight terrorism in the region. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more.
With the U.S. military now out of Niger, defense officials say their presence in West Africa has dropped from about 1,000 troops at this time last year to fewer than 300 today. U.S. Major General Kenneth Ekman led the withdrawal of U.S. forces, who were helping counter violent extremist organizations, or VEOs, in the Sahel.
If there was one country that was most important on our ability to address Sahelian VEO problems or the Sahelian VEO challenge, it was Niger. It is a strategic setback with regards to how each of us pursues our security objectives in the region.
Military analyst Bill Raggio says the already dire terrorism in West Africa is worsening.
The jihadists have been on the march.
You know, in some countries, it's stunning. For instance, Burkina Faso. It's admitted that about 40% of the country is under control of Al-Qaeda's branch there.
He says that without a major base to host troops and surveillance drones, U.S. and French counter-terror missions in West Africa are in bad shape. Without the Western support that existed before the junta ousted the democratically elected government, Niger has failed to hold back a rising terrorist tide. The Nigerian military says terror attacks earlier in December killed at least 39 people, including children, near the border with Burkina Faso.
In Niger, violent extremist attacks have become more lethal. That's a fact since the coup on 26 July 2023. They've got fewer resources and fewer partners.
But officials say the withdrawal doesn't mean the U.S. military is giving up on West Africa. Instead, it's resetting its efforts.
This is the nascent stages of our reset.
General Michael Langley, the head of U.S. Africa Command, told VOA in October he aims to build a new footprint to help fight the region's growing terror threat.
We pulled out of Niger, but we are engaging with coastal West Africa countries because if we look at the what direction is metastasized on the northern regions of Cote d'Ivoire, of Ghana, and Togo and Benin.
Ekman says that requires a different approach.
If our presence in Niger allowed us to go inside out relative to the Sahelian-based VEO threat, we now have to revert to going outside in. Countries like Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Benin, Chad, our access to them and the degree to which they want to partner with us will influence how we go outside in.
And General Langley says negotiations to work with those governments will take time.
We're still in stages of defining what that host government at their higher levels of what they do want from us to be able to complete that solution set to effectively account terrorism.
As deliberations continue, more and more terrorists are threatening the very governments whom analysts say have pushed away the countries that might be able to help them. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Many Israelis will remember 2024 as the year that more than 100 Israeli hostages spent in captivity after being kidnapped during the Hamas assault in October 2023. The Israeli government's failure to bring them home has had a deep effect on Israeli society. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
For many Israelis, it is inconceivable that Hamas continues to hold some 100 Israeli hostages in Gaza after more than a year of war. Like many of the hostages' relatives, Yarden Gonen has worked desperately day and night traveling all over the world to make sure the plight of her sister and the other hostages kidnapped by Hamas in the October 7, 2023 attack would not be forgotten.
We're not just feeling violated by the fact that terrorists invaded Israel and murdered so many people and kidnapped so many others. We also feel abandoned. I mean, how come the world believes a terror organization narrative more than an innocent people?
Israeli protests demanding a ceasefire deal to release the hostages grew in size and intensity during 2024. They reached a peak when hundreds of thousands went to the streets after it was revealed that six young hostages were killed in captivity and their bodies brought back by Israeli soldiers. Gil Dickman is the cousin of one of those hostages, Carmel Gatt. He says the protests show the wide gap between the will of the Israeli people and what he sees as the politically motivated actions of the government.
Most of Israelis want the hostages to come home, and they're willing to pay the prices. The government, the leadership, they'd rather keep this war going forever and not end this war, even if it means that the hostages will stay in captivity.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that ending the war with a hostage deal and a ceasefire would mean that Hamas stays in power and could present a threat to Israel in the future. As a tenuous ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah in South Lebanon took hold late in 2024, many hoped that a deal with Hamas that would end the war and free the hostages could be next. But until that happens, many Israeli analysts and politicians say the society is still trapped in the trauma of October 7th. Shelley Talmeron is a Knesset member from the opposition Yesh Atid party.
We're traumatized from what happened to us, and it's going to take a long time to rehabilitate the Israeli society. But I think there is no rehabilitation without bringing them back home. That's the first step. Once they're here, we will have all the opportunity to take care of them and take care of the Israeli society.
A recently released Hamas propaganda video shows Israeli-American hostage Idan Alexander pleading for U.S. President-elect Donald Trump to help secure his freedom. Trump has warned that there will be, quote, all hell to pay if the hostages are not released before he takes office in January. When and if that happens, Israeli society will have a long road of healing ahead. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
U.S. gun violence prevention measures have been strengthened under the Biden administration, but big policy changes are expected once President-elect Donald Trump takes office later this month. VOA's Veronica Beldares Iglesias spoke with gun owners and gun safety advocates about the matter.
That gun owners' rights will be protected under his leadership is a promise that President-elect Donald Trump has said he'll swiftly deliver on.
In my second term, we will roll back every Biden attack on the Second Amendment. The attacks are fast and furious, starting the minute that Crooked Joe shuffles his way out of the White House.
Almost 47,000 lives were lost to gun violence in 2023, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President Joe Biden put a series of measures in place that researchers say are helping to bring that number down, explains Jen Poliokonis, Director of Policy and Programming at the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions. She spoke via Skype.
This includes the American Rescue Plan funds to support community violence intervention programs. The Biden administration has strengthened the ability of the ATF and the FBI to regulate the industry.
Gun rights advocates say these measures violate the right to bear arms granted in the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. They are confident Trump will do away with them. Alan Gottlieb is Executive Vice President of the Second Amendment Foundation. He spoke via Skype.
We don't think that they've done anything to keep people safe. All they've done is infringe on Second Amendment rights.
Supporters are also eager for Trump to fulfill his pledge to sign a concealed carry reciprocity law. It would facilitate permit holders traveling to all 50 states with their weapons. Nick Clark, President of the gun rights group, Wisconsin Carry Incorporated, via Skype.
In each state that you pass through, you have to look up their specific gun laws, and in some cases, you wouldn't be legal to carry in those particular states. So that's something that we would like to see at the federal level.
Frank Cimarelli's son, Camden, who had a history of mental health problems, died weeks after shooting himself in 2022 with a legally purchased gun. Cimarelli would like gun safety measures such as enhanced background checks to remain in place under the Trump administration.
You know, if a mom or dad wants to keep a gun in the house for protection, I have no problem with that. The problem I have is, why does your right to have a gun overshadow my right to keep a gun out of my house?
Pew Research surveys show there's broad bipartisan support, but Americans remain deeply divided on most gun policy proposals. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The DRC military says at least 23 soldiers are facing a death penalty or 10 to 20 years in prison. This following their arraignment for alleged rape, desertion, and other crimes amid the fighting in the country's troubled east. Security forces have been fighting more than 120 rebel groups in the mineral-rich region for years. The AP reports the government lifted a more than 20-year moratorium on the death penalty in March, a decision criticized by rights activists. Eastern Congo has long struggled with armed violence as rebels fight for power, land, and resources while others try to defend their communities. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mukbil Yabaro in Washington on the first day of the new year. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer David Vandy and our engineer Helen Cordian, thanks for choosing the Voice of America, and we hope you are having a happy and healthy new year as you stay with us for the rest of 2025.
Worldwide News Update. The investigation into the crash.